Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And today it's going to be taking a little bit of a different turn because we're going to be talking about emotional power, which is directly associated with how you think, how you feel. All of these things integrate. My guest today, her name is Janice Webb, and she has a book that she's put together that brings perspective. Well, it's something that I've been aware of to a degree, but she brings it to a different platform of thinking, running on empty. It's about how you can overcome your childhood emotional neglect. Janice, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, thank you, Donna.
I was intrigued with the title because when I thought about it, who as a kid doesn't have something to complain about? I don't know of anybody on this planet, I could be wrong, that hasn't had some negative things happen to them in childhood. But your background is in psychotherapy. You have done a lot of research, and you have your own private practice. You're in Boston, in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And why is it that emotional neglect became such a significant issue for you? What was it in your research that made you feel that people needed to be more aware of this?
Well, there have been so many great books written. Like you said, almost everyone has negative things happen to them in childhood. And there have been so many excellent books written about this, and there's been a lot of research about childhood events and childhood abuse and childhood mistreatment and physical neglect. But what even the mental health field and certainly people in general overlook greatly is something that is much less visible, and it's emotional neglect, because it's not something that happens to a child. It's something that fails to happen for a child, and yet it has very powerful effects on us once we grow up. And what happened was I kept seeing in my practice over and over again people who were telling me, I feel like something is wrong in my life. I have everything I could want. I have a good job. I have a good family. I look back on my childhood, and it was fine. I had loving parents. I have no excuse for not being happier and for having these challenges. And the more I saw it, the more I realized that we were looking in the wrong place for an explanation, and that what really was going on for these people was that their parents had not met their emotional needs when they were growing up. And that doesn't mean they weren't loved, because they were loved. Many of them were loved by their parents, but their parents were not in tune with them emotionally, and that actually leaves people struggling in adulthood.
This I found intriguing because I believe you use the term white space. It's, I think, what you don't remember of what didn't happen in your childhood. And I think it would leave a few people scratching their heads saying, what do you mean what didn't happen in my childhood? What do you mean this, and this? And I thought your perspective of presenting this component was a thoughtful one, because it really does require you to think, to ask questions. What is this that you're referring to? How do you enable someone that seemingly has it all, that is, well, when anybody would be around them, they think everything is absolutely ideal.
Mm-hmm.
How did you determine that unknown something?
I'll answer the first part of that first. So I'll give you the definition of childhood emotional neglect, and then I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Childhood emotional neglect is a parent's failure to respond enough or in the right way to a child's emotional needs. And so you can see by that definition, it's not something a parent does. It's something a parent fails to do enough of. And here's an example. So let's say a 10-year-old boy named Josh comes home from school feeling upset because he had a huge fight with his friends on the playground that day. So he's feeling this combination of hurt because his friends ganged up on him, and he feels embarrassed because he got so frustrated he cried in front of them, and he feels mortified because he has to go back to school the next day to face his friends. So he comes home from school, and Josh's loving parents are not very tuned in, and they fail to notice that he's upset. So they go about the afternoon and the evening as if nothing is wrong with Josh. So this, of course, happens to every child, you know, many times in their childhood. And there's nothing really wrong with it. No child, no parent is expected to be 100% in tune with what their child is feeling at all times. But it's kind of a question of how much does it happen? Because if it happens enough that what a child is feeling is not noticed or responded to by the parents, that child is receiving a very powerful message, which is, Josh, your feelings don't matter. They're not important. They're not even noticeable. They're not important enough to comment on or talk about. And so what Josh will do in order to get by in his family is minimize and push away his emotions, or in the very least, he's going to ignore them, which will be okay until he gets into adulthood. And at that point, he's going to experience a number of problems because he doesn't have access to his emotions the way that he should. And that leads to problems with understanding emotion and being able to read it in other people and in himself, which we now call emotional intelligence. It's going to interfere with his ability to emotionally connect to other people. And it's going to prevent him from truly knowing himself on a deep level because he won't know really how he feels about things or have access to his feelings to guide his decisions in adulthood. And then once he has kids, he's going to, unless he figures this out, he's going to unwittingly pass it down to his own kids because that's what emotional neglect does. It just repeats itself over and over again.
This is something that I know I've had a discussion with various individuals through the years about repetitive patternings in families. And of course, there's a very, very consistent amount of stuff that's passed along, especially dependent on the personality of the members of family, because there's some people, things don't bother them. I mean, that's no big deal, just sort of like water rolling off of a duck's back. Okay, this happened, that's fine, we move on, doom. And then you have someone else that can be on the other side of the spectrum that is so sensitive that no matter what happens, they're reading 10,001 different things into it. Then you have everything in between. The human nature is a fascinating study, I think, because some things can be evaluated very carefully, and others, you really have to dig down. And I think that's one of the points that you bring out in the book, is that as adults, that is something that perhaps we need to invest in ourselves. Not that we have to psychoanalyze ourselves until powder, but we need to be able to look at some things and have an honesty about those emotional selves. And I think that many times in our very, very busy world, that things are just stuffed, and they are stuffed and stuffed and stuffed until all of a sudden somebody blows up or there is an extreme behavior of some kind that can be harmful to the individual or to someone else. And we're all aware of that. I really think that awakening to a patterning that has been done over and over again. I can remember something happening with me many years ago, and I remember doing a particular patterning, and I thought, this is exactly what was done to me. Why am I doing this? We're almost robotic. It says if it's gone into the subconscious, and because that's what we know and we haven't had a comparison otherwise, then it's really a challenge. Because as you said, there's no perfect parent. Parent doesn't exist. Look at how many people have kids when they're young. They're growing up themselves. They're taking the kids. They're not really mature. I think that's one of the reasons why women are wanting to have children later in life, so that they have that sense of balance in their space. when they have children. But what would you recommend as a beginning step for someone? Your book, Running on Empty, is a good read, but what are some of the things that you feel people need to be aware of that they can do for themselves so that they pay attention?
Well, step one is figuring out whether emotional neglect is a problem for you. And that can be a little bit tricky just because it's not something that you remember from childhood, as we already talked about. So a lot of times the best way to figure it out is start by what you're struggling with as an adult. And if you're feeling a sense of emptiness or disconnection or lack of fulfillment or having difficulty understanding emotion, feeling like you're not taking the best care of yourself, all of those things are signs that you are emotionally neglected. And then figuring out in what way is step two. And really, I think the biggest and most important thing for emotionally neglected adults to do is start to have a different relationship with emotion. Once you've pushed it away, I mean, you've probably noticed in our society we make fun of emotions a lot and feelings, mm-hmm. and we minimize them in general and make jokes about it, which is all fine, unless you really do it for real and it's not just playing around. If you live your life this way, thinking of emotions as a joke, you're really missing out on a way to connect with yourself and connect with other people and live a really rich and rewarding life. So I have a whole section, and in fact, an entire chapter in the book is about learning about emotion, accepting it, and there's a program for how to learn how to put feelings into words and know when to share them and when to manage them and how to manage them and all of that. So that's a huge part of it.
One of the segments in your book talks about the authoritarian parent. And this one was of interest to me because there are so many people in my life that I strongly relate to relative to this. And this is something that's come up in a number of conversations, especially when you have older members of a generation that came through World War II. And I know that I've dealt with people in their 80s, even in their 90s, that have such emotional need because it was a horrible period, and it was a period of extreme deprivation in the lives of the people that I've come in contact with. Very, very harsh environments, excruciatingly so. And they basically were told to swallow it. And so when younger generations came along that were not involved in that ugliness, that were not involved in that horror, and I've seen this in different cultures as well, to speak of these things, to be able to go down and to recognize that authority is important. We need to have order in life. But when they have this in theirs and they are trying to let go of that paradigm, it is extremely painful for them. You talk about an emotional depth, you go into that, it's really strong. And it's so painful many times that they actually become almost, how can I say this, subservient to people around them, living a life that is so devoid of any fulfillment at all, because this is what you're supposed to do. If I don't do it this way, I can't survive. If I really give in to my feelings, then I'm going to be beaten to death, verbally or however. And it's a sad thing to see. And I see this pain so much in a very mature generation, but I also see some of this because of what has been passed along. The same thing there, and yet you have the other side of the extreme. How would you recommend someone come to be at peace with this, that they can let this go?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. It's what you're talking about. It's actually not the harsh environment that causes emotional neglect. It's how the parents deal with it and whether they recognize the effect that the harsh environment is having on their children and talk to them about it, because the harsh environment will have its own effect. But if a parent is aware of what a child is feeling in response to it, the parent can help the child get through almost anything with, you know, much less of an effect. But once you get through a situation like that, like the population that you're talking about who lived through that post-war era and lived through all of that, you know, basically deprivation, I think recognizing that the environment was what it was, but it's how you dealt with it emotionally that you can change. You can't change what happened, but you can change how you feel about it and how you treat yourself and how you handle your own emotions, and that can make the whole thing seem completely different.
You also, relative to what we were discussing, have a section in here on a child as a parent. And there are families that I know where maybe, believe it or not, they had 10, 15 kids, and the mother, from the time she was quite young, had to take care of her siblings. She went from that into a marriage, ended up having 10 kids of her own. And this woman became an extreme authoritarian. Well, just the thought of dealing with 10 kids exhausts me. I don't know about anybody else, but I just go, are you kidding? And I can remember telling the individual, by the time this person came along, they were number 9. I said, by the time number 9 came along, I'm sure she was so exhausted, all she did was just react. She didn't think, because she had 10 kids she was taking care of and working full-time and all of this. You go into the zombie zone, and I'm sure any woman listening to this would just probably faint if she thought she could have, if she was going to have to take care of 10 kids. I mean, that's enough to exhaust anybody. But let's go into that, because there are situations. There may not be 10 kids. There might just be a couple. You have a story about a third grader, Zeke, and him going into that role model. Tell us about Zeke.
Zeke is the only character in the book who I completely made up. He's complete fiction. All of the other vignettes are true, real people. But Zeke I used as, he's a child, and I used him as an example to demonstrate or illustrate how each emotionally neglectful parent type would respond to the same situation in the same child. So, for example, with Zeke in the child as parent, when he came home, he knew that his mother was not going to get upset about the note he had from his teacher, because his mother relied on him to take care of his little sister while she worked. Mm-hmm. And it put him in a role where he really wasn't, even though his mother loved him and was doing the very best she could by working full time to take care of the family financially, he knew that he wasn't going to be held responsible for getting in trouble at school, because he had a little bit too much power in the family for a child his age. And when Zeke comes home to an authoritarian parent, that parent says, how dare you? You know, you are supposed to respect authority, and you've shown disrespect to both your teacher and to me by getting in trouble at school, and you are going to spend the night, the evening in your room, and no dinner. Because authoritarians view their child's behavior as all in relationship to themselves and their need for respect, and how the child is not supposed to make waves. But, you know, in the book there are 12 different parent types, and Zeke encounters each of them and how each of them would react differently.
You have a story in here about William and how William just was not in any way, shape, or form prepared for adulthood. He really was pretty much given just about everything he wants. I've always said to people, if you don't learn things when you're young, I guarantee you life's going to teach you the lessons later on in adulthood.
In a much harsher and harder way, right?
Yes, absolutely true. So William is someone that had, he didn't have to worry about rules. He didn't have to do pretty much of anything. And we all know one of those where it just seems like no matter what. I can remember a girl, Judy, that I knew when I was growing up. I was appalled. She was just allowed to get away with everything. I mean, literally everything. And I looked at that, and I just thought, oh, my goodness. And I was a kid, and I just said, this you know, this just is not acceptable. And I watched her, some of the things that she did, she shoplifted, she did all kinds of things. And she was an only child. She was the nightmare. I mean, if you wanted to write a story about someone that's a nightmare to be around, she was. But I do know she was miserable at the same time. So let's talk about William, because that brought back the memory of the childhood friend I had, Judy, whose life was just a tragedy. I have no idea what happened to her later. But I'm sure her life was just one big mucky mess, because though William had a so-called perfect childhood, his adult life was anything but that.
Yeah, I think William and Judy both are examples of what I think is very, very much more common now than the authoritarian parent, which is the permissive parent. This is the parent who may truly love and care for their child, but does not understand, just basically wants their child to be happy and have a smile on their face all the time, and doesn't want to fight with the child, so basically doesn't set enough rules and limits or requirements for the child. And children who don't feel a sense of structure and demands around them, first of all, don't learn a lot of the skills that are necessary to prepare them for adulthood, but also, they feel a need to push the boundaries farther and farther. So you'll see teenagers doing more and more outlandish things, trying to find out, wait, where's the ceiling here? How far can I go with this before somebody finally makes me stop? It's not a conscious thought, of course, but it's just what teenagers do. But I think permissive parents are really common these days. And I think it's partly why adults now in our society have so much trouble stopping themselves from doing things that they shouldn't do or making themselves do things that they don't want to do, because they didn't have enough experience at that as a child, because their parents weren't making them do things they didn't want to do. They didn't want to go through the fight with the child, so they took the easy route.
Well, I think that there's another segment, too, of change that's occurred within our social context, in that the technology that we have today, and it disturbs me somewhat because I see it among young people and even adults, young adults, and that is a detachment. And we'll come full circle with the emotional side of the self. It's as if they are living through technology. They are disassociating from the realities of everyday living. They are expressing themselves through video games. They become more of a real world that they can escape into. There are so many different scenarios that publicly have evolved, and some of these people look like deer caught in the headlights of a car. Their eyes are real big. Well, don't you get it? I mean, after all, this is what happens on the video games. I don't understand why you're so upset. They are zoning out. And it concerns me. It really concerns me. And I had to chuckle. I was in a meeting, and there was a woman that had gone on a trip to the Amazon. And she said it was quite an experience, because one of the women, there was a group of women that had gone on this trip, they're down in the middle of the Amazon jungle. This woman puts it, and the group pulls out a cell phone. She said, I can't get a signal. This woman turned around her. She said, you're in the middle of the Amazon jungle, for God's sake. You can't get a signal here.
And, that woman was out of her element, wasn't she?
This is, you know, it's a detachment. It's a disassociation from the reality of life. And life is an experience that that should be lived. And I think being unaware of the feelings and facing them, and that's one of the components that I think your book addresses, is how to get in touch as mature people. What we need to do is really have a sense of awareness about ourselves and be willing to explore that white space, as you described it, in the self. Now, you have a section in your book, and one of the sections here, it's called self-care. And I think that that's very important. We've heard about this in different modalities. But how can this assist someone? What are some of the tips that you would recommend to people if they're not feeling fulfilled, if they look around and they say, I've got all this stuff, I've got this, I've got that, I've got the other. What's wrong with me? Why am I not feeling fulfilled? What would you say to them?
Well, in terms of self-nurturing, I think the problem comes in that if you grow up in a family that's not paying attention to who you truly are and who doesn't get to know you on a truly, deeply emotional level, you don't get to know yourself, who you really are, and you don't get to know yourself on a deeply personal, emotional level. And then as an adult, it's really hard to feel like, it's hard, first of all, to even know what you necessarily enjoy or what you like and dislike, because no one ever really asked you that enough as a child. And it's also very difficult to feel like it's okay to say no to things. It's okay to ask for help. And it's hard to know what your own needs are. And therefore, you end up not really taking care of yourself. So I've seen many people who were emotionally neglected in childhood have a really difficult time putting their own needs first for themselves. And they'll end up doing everything for everyone else, over caretaking, and feeling really bad about asking for help. So I think, you know, in addition to what I was talking about earlier, which is getting in touch with your emotions and accepting them and learning about them and learning how to use them and manage them, the other side of this is also learning how to take care of yourself, making sure that you know what you like and don't like and that you know what you enjoy and feeling okay asking for that. And asking for help and things and saying no to people and making sure that your own physical and emotional needs are met. I think emotionally neglected people have guilt around taking care of themselves, and that's something that really has to be busted apart, because that's a dead-end road.
And I think if one is willing to make an investment in themselves in that way, and there will be those feelings, oh, this is selfish, I shouldn't be doing this for myself, I should be doing this for some, you know, putting this effort towards this, that, or the other. But I think if someone's a parent, when they can do that for themselves, when they can give to themselves, then they're going to be a better parent because of that. And sometimes that means that you just stop, you slow down, you actually make a choice of your priorities, reassembling those priorities. And I think for the adult, when the adult is busy, 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 and they have no space to breathe, then this gives them an opportunity to say, wait a minute, I've got to be able to do this for myself, because if I do it for myself, then if I make this investment in myself, I'm going to be much closer to the people that I really love. I'm really going to be able to enjoy new friendships. I'm going to be able to enjoy being in my own skin. I mean, this is something that I think a lot of people can feel good with, and it's just going to empower them on so many levels of their life. And they will realize that maybe they're not meant to be a superstar, per se, and they're not going to be like one person I remember dating, who the only objective he had was to become a millionaire by the time he was 30, and he thought he was a total failure when he didn't make it. And I thought, do I want to spend time with this person? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no conversation. This individual could not communicate, and that was his total, total focus. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting money, but there's so much more to life. There's so much more to life. And I think you bring out some excellent points about when we feel disconnected, dissatisfied. Take time to investigate it. Don't be afraid of it. And sometimes you might find it's from something that you didn't even think was significant. And that's
right,
where your book, Running on Empty, I think has some very valuable information in it.
Yes, I think it's all about looking under the surface and being willing to face things. And people who are running at 50 miles an hour through life really are often doing that unconsciously because they don't want to have to sit with themselves. And this book really is about sitting with yourself for a while and looking inside and looking back and seeing what went wrong for you and taking the initiative and the responsibility to fix it so that it doesn't continue on and on and on through generations.
Janice Webb, your book, Running on Empty, is a fascinating one. You have a website, emotionalneglect.com, for those of you listening. You might be interested in checking it out because I think all of us have things that we can, let's say, bring them up to the surface, buff them out, and take charge of our lives. I think anything that empowers you so that you can be more of who you really are and take joy and pleasure in it is an asset. And I encourage the book, Running on Empty. Janice Webb, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It was a delight. This is Donna Siebel. I'm broadcasting to you live from Santa Barbara, California, which is gloriously beautiful, as Santa Barbara always is, with the wonderful ocean and palm trees and you name whatever else is here. Oh, it's just absolutely fabulous. Flowers are in bloom. It's a wonderful place to be. We're coming back in just a moment. I'll be with you sharing some more good things. Janice Webb, emotionalneglect.com. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. As I said, I'm here in beautiful Santa Barbara on a business trip, and I am enjoying the magnificence of this lovely area. And it's fun to be back in what I call old home turf. But regardless of where I am, the show is going to go on, and you are more than welcome to give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and then I will be more than delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, we are going to chat for a bit, and you're encouraged to ask a question about anything that crosses your mind. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Brad Phillips about a subject we all have an opinion on, and that is media. But we're going to be talking about the Media Training Bible. Now, the reason this is to me quite significant, being involved in media, there are so many things you need to be aware of. And I think that Brad has got some marvelous tips here that if you yourself are looking at being involved with media, if you're going to be interviewed, you're wanting to do radio, television, maybe you want to be on my show. Well, this is something that this is a wonderful asset, a wonderful tool. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Michael Cremo. Michael Cremo is known for his historical research in archaeological digs, etc., and talking about the human being on this planet for a lot longer than we ever realized. Well, he's come out with a book, My Science, My Religion, and it's all about his journey and how his journey of self-discovery enabled him to enter into the world of archaeology and the study of history that, well, pretty much has become his life's work. So we're going to be talking with Michael on Thursday, and then Dowsing. Wilma Davidson is my guest. We'll be traveling to England to talk to Wilma. Wilma will be giving us firsthand tips on how you can douse, how just about anybody can be a dowser and be very successful with it, how dowsing can be very useful to you on multiple levels. And so we are looking forward to our lineup of guests. We've got some dynamic people. And again, today you are welcome to give me a call at, as always, at 888-627-6008. Too many times you'll hear statements by individuals saying, well, nobody cares. Nobody cares. This is a very, very cold, unfeeling world that we live in. The reality is there are a lot of people that care. And sometimes events occur in their lives which happen to them and make them feel like they want to pay it back, pass it on, if you will. And I think of one woman whose story I came across just recently, Linda, who is from Indiana. She said her mother had spent her last months in a hospice facility, and she was so impressed with the staff at the hospice facility because if there was a holiday like Valentine's Day or Halloween, Christmas, whatever, they always were very thoughtful. They made her comfortable. They remembered her. And she said, when I go in and I would see the generosity and the thoughtfulness and the kindness of these people, she said, my mother felt very much loved. I was there on a regular basis, but my mom really felt safe. She felt loved. And she said their support helped me get through a very tough time because I was watching my mom in the process of dying. Well, once her mom passed away, she said, I really wanted to give back. There had been so much kindness by these people who had been strangers when we first got to know them that ended up being sort of like family because of their thoughtfulness and their care. And she said, I'd always been an avid sewer. And she said, my mother had taught me how to do it. And she thought, I want to do something for this wonderful group of people that give so much. And once someone passes away, usually they don't see anybody else again. They don't see the family members again. So what Linda decided she was going to do, she decided she would make quilts. She was going to make some things and donate them to the hospice group. And she felt that lap quilts would be something that would be very nice because usually when people are elderly and when they're sick, they're always cold. It's just their circulation is very poor. And she said they just love it, and it's so fulfilling to her because she feels like she is repaying, in a sense, the love and the generosity. Money is not necessarily going to do it. Money's always appreciated, but she said, I felt like I was giving to those that I may never know, letting them know that there was the caring, and every time she makes a quilt, she sort of infuses it with her own energy, if you will, saying, just know you're loved, and we want to let you know that we care. And this is what she does. And I thought that was something that was so special. How many times can you do something that's thoughtful? You know you're not, nobody's going to stand and blow a trumpet and say, guess what so-and-so did today. But when you can do that kind of thoughtfulness, when you give without expectation of payment, when you pass the good along, I don't care whether it's a card, a phone call, just saying thank you to someone or appreciating someone by doing something nice. That really makes a difference. You make a difference in life, and you affect that person in a way that, well, just like with Linda, you could never imagine. And it just keeps moving right along. That's what changes the world. That is what makes a difference. One little action at a time. And it's sort of like those butterfly wings we hear so much about, that a butterfly flying in Argentina affects the weather patterns in China. Well, your thoughtfulness and your kindness affects people in untold ways, in untold manners. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. When I'm flying, I'm often carrying a number of books with me because that's just what I do. And, of course, doing the show every day, I'm always looking for interesting stories, and I came across one. And this one is in Prevention Magazine, and it's about a Dr. Ho. Now, this doctor is 90 years young. 90 years young. He's in a little Chinese village, and he has the Jade Dragon Snow Mountain Clinic in China. Now, he's very, very well known. And there was this couple, the wife's name is Jeannie, and she said they were going across China. They were visiting there. And she said, we were in this little tiny village, and she sees an American walking around with a bag of stuff. And she said, it looked like marijuana. And she said, what are you doing with that? And this is in the Himalayan foothills, by the way. And he said, oh, this? He said, it's medicine. And he said, it's from Dr. Ho. Have you never heard of Dr. Ho? And he went on to tell them the story about how Dr. Ho has been running the Jade Dragon Snow Mountain Chinese Herbal Medicine Clinic, and he's been curing people of cancer and all kinds of things for decades. Again, he's 90 years young, and he said, my wife has arthritis. He gave her this to massage into her elbow and also to drink as a tea. Now, this couple, they were on vacation in China, and the village was Baisha. They had come to this little village. They'd ridden on bicycles from a mainland area, and she said, we just were totally unaware that we had accidentally stumbled into this village. And she said, my husband and I are very health conscious. We are not vegetarians, but she said, we are really aware of how we're supposed to eat and take care of ourselves and this type of thing. So we're in pretty good condition. But she said, no matter what we had done, my husband had noticed a problem with energy. He just could never be up to par. And then she said, for me, I couldn't sleep. I've had this thing with insomnia for I don't know how long. She said, I just couldn't sleep. Well, they decided they were going to go see Dr. Ho. So they go over to the clinic because they were curious. And they said, well, we would like to see him while we're here. Is that possible? And they said, well, he's very busy with people. So they watched an Italian woman go in and talking, and had people from all over that were visiting Dr. Ho. And finally, they had a chance to sit in front of him, and there's a photograph of him in the article, and he looks exactly the way you would expect a Chinese sage to look. That's exactly how he looks. He's got the beard, he's got the mustache, he's got the little cap on his head. Now, the one thing he did get from the Western world is the white coat. That's right. He's wearing a white coat, and he will diagnose you, and he takes your pulse and he checks your tongue. Now, this is something in Chinese medicine that is done by the practitioners because they believe the body will express through various ways what might be wrong with you. And he said to her, he said, you're very healthy. You're in very good condition, not the way a lot of the Americans that I see are, because he said Americans really don't take care of themselves very well. And he checked her husband. He said, you're strong, you're healthy, but I have a tea I'm going to make up for you. And he gave them tea, and he had to mark it so that it was known that this was a medicine, so that it would go through customs. And he said, you must remember something too. You as a patient must be optimistic in your attitude. You need to live your life with common sense and use both Western and Chinese medicine whenever it is appropriate. And the comment was, life and disease exist, each moving in tandem. Optimism is the best medicine. Eat simply, live simply, but above all, be optimistic. Well, they were very, very impressed with him. They also found out that he had gotten some education from Western medicine. He had actually been in the U.S. military and worked at getting medical training at a U.S. military hospital in the 30s, the 1930s. And he learned about herbs and English from a very well-known botanist whose name was Joseph Rock. And this was a gentleman who had been alive at a time that many of us would not have even recognized. But regardless, he's used this. He's developed it all of these years. Now, they came back to the United States, and they started drinking the tea. And they said, well, I don't think it's making any difference, but we'll just keep it up. Well, her insomnia went away. And the husband's energy went up. It was a very, very distasteful tea. She said, the only way we could get it down was by putting honey in it. Yet she said there was a difference. And they went so far as to taking the tea to the AOMA Graduate School of Integrative Medicine, a Chinese medicine school that's in Austin, Texas, to have it evaluated. And do you know, it was so finely processed by Dr. Ho, they couldn't identify all of the components in it. But by smell, one of the people said, I know that it has a particular Yen Chen Hao in it. Fascinating stuff. A touch of licorice, just amazing stuff. So if you have a chance, you might want to check out that article about Dr. Ho. Just shows that the ancient wisdom can be very compatible with the modern, as Dr. Ho said. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Siebel is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. All of us, give me a buzz, by the way, if you'd like to chat with me, 888-627-6008. Oh, and before I forget it, I want to thank Pam Ausley. I did her radio show yesterday, and all of those people that called in during the show, I'm so delighted. Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Pam. She is a gracious radio host, and I've been on her show before, and it was just a delight seeing her again in person and being a part of her audience. So I want to thank her very much for giving me that opportunity. We have a caller on the line. Let's go to that caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Thank you. From New York.
Okay, I'm sorry, dear. I didn't get your name.
Penny.
Penny, okay. All right, yes. And let me give you information, dear. Where are you in New York? New York City, Brooklyn, Bronx?
Brooklyn.
You're in Brooklyn. Okay. Mm. All right. Now, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is you are going to find your organizational skills are very good, and you want to stay on track with your agenda. You have got a plan. You've taken a lot of time after the holiday period of the year, and you said, I must sit down and I must have quiet time, and I've got to really look at the things that I need to eliminate that I don't want in my life space anymore, and I need to really look at what I want to focus on, because I've got to keep my focus so I can get things done before the end of spring. And I think you're right on. You are absolutely correct in your assessment. There's nothing wrong with your thinking or your planning. Now, you do have some individuals in your life that may be causing a little bit of upheaval or interference, and I want you to be at peace with that. Just say, all right, this is my priority. I can do so much over here, but I really need to focus on this. And I think what's happening with you is that you are really starting to recognize that you need to really take care of yourself, because there's a couple of health issues that have been a concern to you. They're not major, but you're saying, if I don't take care of myself, because I know I'm going to live to be an old woman, I want to be able to be vigorous in my old age. I want to take care of me. This is an excellent, excellent way for you to be. And so you're having to say no to certain things, and it's hard for you because automatically you will do certain things without even thinking about it, and then you are saying, all right, I have to pay attention. I really think you're doing well. I really do, Penny. I think you're doing very, very well, and I want you to know that economically you're going to be solid. You're going to be safe. You're going to be sound. And that your financial shift that you're looking at is one that is going to take place gradually. It's not going to happen real fast. So I want you to just be patient. You're making some very, very good choices. What's on your mind? What would you like to ask me about today?
Yes. What question? How about my career?
All right. What kind of a career are you wanting to work with?
My job. So I do part-time or full-time. I have health problem. Yeah. I need to go there to China to get well.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, with what kind of work are you doing? What is your career?
Assistant teacher.
A teacher?
Assistant teacher. Mm-hmm. In kindergarten.
All right. Well, I think what's occurring is that you really have outgrown that environment. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, it's time for you to move into another level of career. But you're going to do this gradually. You're going to make some choices. And taking care of your health is first and foremost. So that is something that you're going to be able to do, and that is a marvelous choice. So you've made some very, very good decisions. Don't be so concerned, because your teaching skills, you're going to be able to fold over into a brand new application. So you may not be with kindergartners anymore, but you are going to find that you're going to take these skills that you have utilized in this particular level and be able to use them in another level. So you're making good choices. Be patient. You're going to be fine.
Yeah. And I have another question about the relationship. I feel like too much sometimes, too much like arguing, something like that.
Well, the reason, the reason you're having problems with the relationship is that, and this person is not a bad person, but they are carrying a lot of emotional garbage. That's what I'll say. You don't need that anymore. There's a lot that you're realizing you do not have to sacrifice yourself for this. And the arguing, it just is not necessary. It creates ill health. The arguing doesn't work. So you need to have integrity with yourself, and it's okay for you to separate for a time so you can see things clearly and realize that you could have a better relationship. But you need to make it so that you don't get into that argumentative style, because that argumentative style, it's not your style. You don't like it, but you feel you have to do it to defend yourself. So that is something, it's a change of thinking on your part, so that you become more like water flowing instead of smashing up against a boulder. You learn how to go around it and move on.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to say goodbye, dear, because I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling
okay.
in.
Take care. Okay.
Will do. Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, the time just flies by. I'm going to be here in Santa Barbara again tomorrow. I invite you to join me because we're going to be talking about a subject we all have an opinion about, and that is media. But how do you work with it? How can you, if you want to get involved with it, how can you manage yourself so that you don't become maybe a piece of stuff in somebody's broadcast that you don't want? Well, we're going to learn about that and more from Brad Phillips. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that you are that individual that lives within your skin, and you want to be sure that you enjoy who you are, what you are, and that regardless of whatever has happened in your past, you can create a real future for yourself the way you want it. You can change the story. This is Donna Siebel. Talk with you same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.